All right.
Welcome to our Sunday simulcast. Brian Newbert, Tom Dienhart join me, and we appreciate a happy new year to all, and we want to thank our sponsors, the Purdue Union Club Hotel, and all that they do. Looking forward to the new year and hopefully some brighter times from the pandemic standpoint, but this is a beautiful facility that is working its way through that to be sure. And we also want to remind folks too that you can subscribe to goldenblack.com. We have a 40-day free trial on there. Appreciate all the people that took advantage of our holiday gift opportunities, et cetera. And very, very important that if you want to do it, you can do it on a 40-day free trial. So Brian, we'll start with you. Last night, obviously a kind of a game, as you pointed out, a very similar game in some ways to the loss to Rutgers, and Purdue had two opportunities this week, the men's basketball team, to come away with victories. It was kind of they had to navigate through a very thin window, but they weren't able to do it. And yet they did some good things. So now having a night to sleep on it, so to speak, how do you view what happened not only Saturday, but this past Tuesday at Rutgers?
Yeah, I think that, you know, Purdue played probably its three toughest Big Ten road games right off the bat, 1-2-3 here, and didn't get their doors blown off by any means. And I think, you know, that shows you something in terms of the fact that Purdue is a different team than it was last year, because, you know, Purdue didn't even look like it belonged on the floor last year with Illinois, at Illinois, and then in the second half in Mackey Arena. And the fact that, you know, Purdue competed with Illinois, made that 19-0 run to take a 6-point lead in the second half after doing the exact same thing against Rutgers, I think shows you that this team can compete. This team, you know, is better than last year's team. This year's team, you know, has something that it needed to have before anything else mattered. And I just think that they don't necessarily know how to win yet. I just think when you get in those moments where you have that lead and you have to play with a cool head and you have to do all the right things to protect that lead, they're just not there yet. And I think that, you know, that's kind of the natural evolution of things sometimes, where teams kind of have to grow into doing the right thing at the right moment and knowing how to win games. I just don't know if they're there yet. What's disappointing about it is, you know, it wasn't necessarily the young guys. The young guys were part of it, but you really needed veteran guard play there when you're up six in the second half and Purdue didn't necessarily get it. And that's where, you know, Purdue's got to get Eric Hunter straightened out. They got to get him playing the way he's capable. He's a really good player. He should be a rock solid player at this stage of his career. He just hasn't been the last two games. But I think outside of that, I think Purdue has done some really positive things here, albeit in defeat. I know that's very, very little consolation to people, but I think that's the reality of it nonetheless. Is these experiences too should prepare Purdue for the rest of the season. And even if you didn't get any of these road games, all of which you were the heavy underdog, this might make things a little bit easier on the road or against some of those 50-50 teams at home, you know, from here on out. I think Purdue just has to grow into consistency and things like that.
Yeah, Brian, big game coming up at home against Nebraska. A game you think Purdue's obviously has to win before they go back on the road. They trek up to Michigan State and then Indiana. So the sledding still remains tough here through mid-January. Sort of tell us what you're going to be looking for from Purdue and the Huskers rolling to town on the 5th of January.
Well, obviously Nebraska is very limited. I don't really know much about their personnel because it changes every single year.
Yeah.
But obviously that's a game Purdue should win. You know, I would like to, if I'm Purdue, I would like to see, you know, them come out and execute well on offense, but also build on what you did defensively at Illinois. I thought Purdue took a real step forward in half court defense. I understand Illinois missed 13 free throws. I understand that, you know, you couldn't keep them out of transition, and that's part of defense. But I thought when Purdue's defense was established, when Purdue wasn't turning the ball over or doing things on offense to compromise its defense, I thought they were exponentially better than they were at Rutgers. And that showed me an ability for this team to address needs on the fly and be self-aware enough to know where they have to get better and actually do something about it. So you'd like to see them continue to carry on that defensive momentum. I don't necessarily know how Nebraska is going to challenge Purdue in that sense. because I don't know enough about their personnel. I think I've seen them play once and I can't remember any of their names, to be honest with you. I'm not even going to pretend. And the one name I do remember, I can't pronounce. So, sorry, Thor. So I would just like to see Purdue be sharp against Nebraska. If I'm Purdue, I'd like to see myself be sharp against Nebraska. The best case scenario is you play really well. You build a lead and you let your freshmen get some run, because those guys need some experience. Those guys need some positive things to happen for them. Jaden Ivey needs to have some success again. You know, he struggled the past two games. It would be nice for Ethan Morton to get some extended playing time again, to show everybody what he's made of now that, you know, he's had some time to, you know, kind of get back into the thick of things, you know, kind of that stuff. Just get guys some more experience here. You haven't had those opportunities. Jaden Ivey missing those non-conference games, I think, were huge, a huge detriment to him. And I think Ethan Morton's kind of languishing a little bit right now after he had to play so much early in the season. It would be good to get those guys more involved here.
Well, you look at those three guys, and you're right. The hard thing is it's with Ethan Morton and with Ivy, and then going to Eric Hunter Jr., where Hunter did come back and play well early, and then he hasn't played well. You would expect, and every expectation of all three of those guys is that they'll continue to make incremental improvement and become really solid players. It's just tough in this environment, this Big Ten gauntlet, to get to that point where you can do that.
Yeah, to the point about the freshmen, you know, I do think that's something we don't remind people of enough, that, you know, the excuses crowd probably won't like, is that this offseason was really messed up. And it was messed up more for young guys, you know, than it was for anybody else. They needed those summer practices, real summer practices, not the bastardized version of those summer practices that they ended up getting. Purdue really could have used that Europe trip. I know that's a once every couple of years thing and not a yearly thing, but this team, to get those guards as engaged as possible, that really would have helped Purdue. And then the fact Ethan Morton gets mono, and then the fact that, you know, Jaden Ivey misses so much time with his foot. I just think those guys got moved from square one to square like negative five through all of these circumstances. So now you've been playing catch up for like 2 months here, and it's just, the Big Ten season's not going to stop to let you catch up either. So, you know, that's kind of put Purdue in a little bit of a tough spot here. But that's where the veterans come in. You know, I thought Travion Williams played really well yesterday. Aaron Wheeler played great. Sasha Stefanovic has played pretty well, really well all season. You just have to get, you know, based on these last two games, Eric Hunter's got to be better. He knows that. He's a better player than he's shown. And I would imagine he'll bounce back starting against Nebraska.
Tom, we'll go to the next topic, and then and Brian will have comment as well. A lot of talk about the transfer portal. We're watching it on a daily basis, or if not an hourly basis, in terms of that. You know, obviously Purdue's nabbed one prospect in the transfer portal. May nab more, but it does make it for a challenge, and maybe heightens that sense of urgency to get your defensive staff together, if that's the position of need and where the Boilermakers may try to go with this kind of open season that we're seeing right now.
Yeah, you're exactly right. That DC job being unfilled obviously would make recruiting defensive players out of the portal a challenge. I mean, who's going to want to come to your school if they don't know who the defensive coordinator is going to be, if they don't know what scheme you're going to run, if they don't know how they're going to be used in your defense? So while that big question mark hangs over Purdue, again, you know, how could you really recruit defensive players out of the portal? So stay tuned there. I mean, this portal is overflowing with players, guys.
It's crazy.
A lot of guys to evaluate. I don't even know where you begin if you're a personnel guy and in a football office, but a lot of names there. People I talk to think there's going to be a lot of names left in there for a long time. Yeah. Some guys may not hitch a ride with anybody, but you got to find a few guys if you're Purdue at some point. And yeah, pick a spot on defense, fellas. And I think Purdue could use a player, right? Defensive end, defensive tackle. And I should back up real quick and say, we still don't know the status of some of these seniors, guys. Who's coming back for sure and who's not coming back? We know JD Dellinger, Derek Barnes, Grant Hermans are gone, but again, what about Anthony Watts? What about Lorenzo Neal? I mean, we haven't heard officially about guys like that, in particular Tyler Coyle. He'd be a heck of an asset to get back to. So I digress, but still, guys, back to positions of need. You know, Brian and I have talked about this off camera too. You know, again, defensive end, but he was last in the Big Ten in sacks. Defensive tackle, you got Lawrence Johnson, and who else? Branson Dean. Need help there, I think. Cornerback, my God. Cornerback, I think they've had six players transfer out the last 2 years. You got Corey Trice. You got Dedrick Mackey. Then you got some youngsters after that. Niles Beverly, you know, Anthony Romp. So, again, those are just some positions on defense. You know, punter is a spot. And O'Brien thinks Purdue could maybe go fishing for. I agree. Maybe they need some competition there. And offensively, I don't think the needs are quite as great on offense. If you could get a tackle, that'd be great. You don't really need a receiver, a tight end, a quarterback. I still think it'd be nice to get a running back. I think maybe you could get somebody on the bounce who's a difference maker. But again, you could still live with Xander Horvath and King DeRue. And don't forget, they're getting a kid from UNLV via Carmel High School, Dylan Downing as well. But he's more of a power back, a 220-pound kid. So again, defensively, in my mind, that's where most of the portal shopping should be done. And again, it's not really feasible to think much shopping can be done until, again, they get that defensive coordinator.
Brian, you know, you've covered this closer than anybody over the years, and recruiting this changes the whole dynamic. We don't even really know for sure how these kids get evaluated, and you've got to be able to do a lot of things on the fly here to determine who fits with your program. And how that all fits together with who you're recruiting in the class of 22 as well. I mean, does that stand to reason to make it an extra challenging piece of the puzzle if you're a coaching staff trying to make this all work?
Yeah, I don't know how they do it. It's almost like, you know, you have a whole personnel department nowadays for high school recruiting, and this is almost like 1B now to that. And yeah. I understand that. Right now, the grad transfer deal is only like a percentage of your class. But the way this is going, the day may come where you're signing half of your class from the high school and junior college ranks, and you're signing half of your class as graduate transfers. Or just transfers, period, because there's not going to be any difference between graduate transfers and transfers here pretty soon. That's going to be the reality of it. And people are going to have to adjust. They're going to have to mobilize to get that done, because guys – are going to have to make decisions very quickly. This isn't going to be one of those deals typically where it's five official visits and then you decide. People have to decide they're leaving in December and then be somewhere else in January. It's a really short time frame to build relationships, to put your best foot forward, to educate people about your institution. It's going to be more about your brand, and it's just going to be more about how much brand recognition people have with you, because you're not going to have an extended runway to actually recruit these guys. I think that, you know, is going to be a tough thing for a lot of people. You know, Purdue, a lot of the recruiting success Purdue has had over the years, it's been with guys who have longstanding relationships with Purdue's coaches. It has had to do with like proximity to home, various things. Purdue has been able to build good relationships with high school recruits. It's been able to have them on campus multiple times before they make a decision. You don't get that sort of advantage in the transfer market. You see it with Purdue basketball too, whereas every time they've recruited transfers, you know, they haven't done it in a while, but they've not been as successful as perhaps they'd like to be, because, you know, their recruiting comfort zone is kind of getting to know a kid and his family and his coaches over a long period of time. And now it's just kind of like a shotgun beauty contest here. It's a really tough thing to do. It's a really tough thing for coaches to know kids before they recruit them. You know, you want to bring in guys who can help you right away. That's the whole point. But how do you know what they're all about? And how do you know how they fit in your program when you have 2 weeks to recruit them, essentially? It's a really dangerous environment, and it's a really tough environment, you know, to thrive in. You want to make sure you're taking the right guys. There's going to be a lot of low hanging fruit in that portal. You have to be careful too, to know everything you need to know about guys. You know, why did they leave the last place? You have to talk to people who know them, you know, things like that, to make sure they don't come in and do more damage than good. And it's just a really tricky market. to handle. But the people who handle it the best, you know, from here on out are going to have a huge advantage.
It's going to be an interesting storyline to watch, and definitely a dynamic that has changed, will change the face of college football recruiting and college football rosters moving forward. All right, one last question. We'll talk about the bowl games that we've been able to at least observe, and really what I think was important for the Big Ten, in even in COVID world, to have its two top teams do well in the bowls, and that being Ohio State, obviously, with its very, very impressive win over Clemson and Northwestern, with really maybe not on the same scale, but a very impressive win over Auburn as well. Tom, I'll start with you. And just and obviously Indiana doesn't beat Mississippi, and there's some, you know, there was some controversy about that too. But important for the Big Ten's brand, you know, because it took such a hit, only playing six games or whatever it was for some of these teams, it was important for them to do well in some of these games.
Yeah, only one loss, Alan. Like you mentioned, IU, of course, losing the Outback Bowl to Ole Miss. Again, an Ole Miss team that was compromised significantly on offense, was 4-5. Tough loss for Tom Allen, you know. They wanted to, of course, cap that year with a win. But otherwise, you know, Wisconsin wins that Duke Mayo Bowl. Talked about Northwestern, Auburn. How about the Ohio State Buckeyes, right? All the squawking about all the accommodations made to get first the Buckeyes into the Big Ten title game. And then, of course, they got into the playoff. And lo and behold, Dave, they've certainly proven their merit with a very impressive victory over Clemson, making Dabo Swinney some crow, right? Now they're going to try to cap it all off here next week. And I remind you of 2014, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Buckeyes surprised everybody with Ezekiel Elliott and Cardale Jones and won it all over Oregon. So, yeah, it's nice for the Big Ten to maybe at least cap what's been a crazy, painful season, a very trying season, maybe with a national champion. And, again, to validate going all the way back to, I guess, what, July, August, seems like a lifetime ago when Big Ten went back and forth.
Yeah.
I wonder if it was going to be a season. I was thinking about this today, guys. I think, my God, the Big Ten probably just – about getting ready to start their spring season.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you imagine that?
Let that sink in. That was crazy to even think that was going to happen, but it's going to happen in the FCS level, guys. Brock's back, our buddy, the Illinois State Redbirds and the Missouri Valley Conference. They're going to start playing football. So I digress, but yeah, nice postseason for the Big Ten. And that'll be fun to see if the Buckeyes can cap it all off with what would be another huge upset if they can knock off that Crimson Tide team.
Yeah, I think, Brian, you look at this, and maybe it's also an indication because we had the Jeff Brohm proposal playing later in spring, and then obviously there was some talk about the January schedule. But it's an indication of what we've dealt with here. We haven't had to deal with the hardships. I'm talking about everybody trying to get a football season in. Still, you know, yes, it seems unbelievable that you'd be playing games after this, after the first of the year, but hard to minimize, you know, again, Ohio State, an example of just how good that program is to be able to go in and handle Clemson the way they did.
Yeah, no matter what happens in the national title game, the Big Ten, in spite of itself, comes out of this a big winner.
Yeah.
Did this season work? I don't know. The Big Ten's protocols didn't work because the league got ravaged by COVID and ravaged. And, you know, I thought going into this that those protocols were, you know, rock solid and COVID wasn't getting in here. But I was obviously very mistaken. The virus is smarter than us. Yeah. That's been proven, and it got the Big Ten. It got the Big Ten real bad at the end. You know, there were tons of cancellations. There were tons of issues with the virus. You got the season in after you mishandled the whole thing in the first place as a conference. But here you are with Ohio State in the national title game. Here you are just having won a bunch of bowl games. Here you are having, you know, it was ridiculous that people were saying that you should have let Indiana go play in the college football. Come on, you know, or the Big Ten title game with a chance to go to the college football playoff. Really? What would have happened had Indiana beat Northwestern in the Big Ten title game and then played Clemson? What would have happened if Northwestern went and played Clemson?
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. I don't know. That's why they play the games. You know, crazy things happen.
I like my chances with Ohio State.
At some point, it's got to go. When is it a beauty contest, and when is it actually what you did on the field, for crying out loud?
You got to do what's best for the league. And
why do we play the games?
Ohio State playing for the national title was the whole point of them having a season.
We could just do this every year. Just Ohio State Auburn gets bit every year then.
Good.
They did go 5-0.
It's Ohio State, it's Alabama, it's Clemson, and Oklahoma is kind of right here.
Yeah, you know what? You know what I heard? This is a great analogy. You know what college football has become, guys? It's become women's college basketball. There's like three schools. That's it. There you go. That's what it is. It's UConn and then maybe a couple other schools, and some rummy fourth team gets in the Final Four every year and gets blown out.
What's the
college football is women's college basketball. That's what it is.
What's the most important part of all of this?
Well, I think I'll make a league of the nation. Yeah, money. Well, you're not involved in the Pac-12 or the Big 12. Not even a national sport.
Yeah, no, it's the money.
There's a lot of money laying around.
There's a lot more money out there if they did it right, too.
Yeah, but Indiana will still cash its check when this all comes back.
Yeah, but Alan, how many times do you get to the precipice of what they did this year? It could be another 100 years, Alan.
Oh, that's true. That is true. But they also benefited from, again, it's an argument that I think we've had in every household in around Big Ten country, and people that like Indiana don't like Indiana. It's an interesting argument, but it is money.
For any team of that ilk, it's not just Indiana. It could be Minnesota. It could be Purdue. How often, Alan, I've seen Purdue go to the Rose Bowl once in my living conscious memory.
Yeah.
I mean, what if that was Purdue this year?
It would have been angry Purdue fans and still Ohio State going. And you're right, the 20-year anniversary of Purdue.
There would have been a lot of angry Purdue fans and a lot of fat checks coming to the Big Ten because Ohio State was going instead.
Yeah, yeah.
You got to do what's best for your conference. You got to do what's best for your sport. And the Big Ten does not benefit from Indiana going and playing on a national stage and getting its ass kicked. That's the reality of it.
Why do we play the games then?
Yeah.
What's the point?
Because if Ohio State loses, then Ohio State can't go. Ohio State didn't lose. Yeah. If Ohio State had lost to Indiana, okay, great. Yes.
Yeah.
Indiana earned the right. But until then,
I'll justify
the doubt goes to the biggest brand. Right. That's just the reality of it. And that's the way that's why Purdue cashes a big fat check from the Big Ten Network every year. That's why the NCAA cashes a big fat check from all the networks every year.
In the NFL,
you just got to look at this stuff for what it is, not what we all inherently altruistically want it to be. This is a money making endeavor and nothing more.
I think there should be an equal access. I mean, it's just ridiculous. In the NFL, the Indianapolis Colts are the same as the New York Giants or the LA Rams. Just because they're in Indianapolis, they've got as good a shot, Brian, to win the Super Bowl as a team in LA, New York, and Chicago.
Yeah.
College football is never going to be like that.
If you put Cincinnati in the Big Ten, what's their record? I mean, that's kind of inarguable.
All I'm asking for is to get an automatic bid to the champions of all the five big school leagues and have three at largest. I understand the playing field in college football is unlevel like no other sport on the planet. It's never going to be fair. The deck is stacked so far against 90% of the teams. But at least make an automatic bid to champions of all these five leagues and just let the committee pick three at-larges.
All right, you get the last word because we can argue about this all day. Go ahead.
We have already crossed every employee line possible for college football players this year.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, expanding the playoff, you know, I don't want to go down an ESPN radio greeny take avenue here, but like expanding the playoff to have a play-in game, so to speak, for like a Cincinnati or something like that, that case might make some sense. And if there are more games, I don't know how you balance it because that's a lot to ask of 18 to 22-year-olds. But so was getting tested for COVID-19 every single day this year and living in a constant pandemic quarantine. That would be one thing. The only other thing, look, the NCAA doesn't give a damn about parity. It never has. It has every opportunity to institute parity. And ever since they cut scholarships to 85, that's the only credible measure I think they've ever taken toward any sort of competitive parity.
That was big. That was a big move.
That was huge. And that's kind of my next point. If you really want parity, and I understand the NCAA's mission is to create opportunities for young men and young women and all of that stuff. So taking away scholarships is not a way to do that. But if you cut scholarships again for football from 85 to 75 or to 80 or whatever it may be, hey, that's five more kids who Ohio State can't take that Purdue gets, okay? Purdue gets better. That's five more kids Purdue can't take that go to Ball State. Ball State gets better. That's five more kids Ball State can't take that go to Grand Valley State. Grand Valley State gets better. As long as the playing field is equal, you know, that's – if coaches have to be more resourceful to coach up their walk-ons and stuff like that, so be it. That's always made sense to me. I understand that you don't want to take scholarships away from anyone when your whole mission is to create these opportunities for people. But, you know, if you want to be compliant with Title IX too, football is the one thing that you cannot match up with. And the less football scholarships there are, the easier that is. But I think from a competitive balance perspective, it would really help college football if there were, if scholarship numbers came down again. That'll never happen because the coaches will have an aneurysm collectively if that's even.
Last question, Brian, do your point about extra games. I'm going to ask you this. So in the FCS ranks, how many games does the national champion end up playing?
It's close to an NFL season, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, and they no, nobody raise a big stink about it, do they? They play 15 or 16 games. Nobody says a peep about that.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's all, and I think though, Brian, and the last thing, and I'll say, I'll have the last word here. And that is that don't be in post COVID. We don't know what the heck's going to happen financially to some of these situations. And it'll be interesting on a Title IX standpoint and being able to fund other programs and programs that get cut, that number of scholarships in football, you know, I don't know that that can't be touched. It'll be interesting.
Oh, I've got some feelings on this. I think football scholarships may go up before they go down, because if we come out of COVID, if college programs start operating themselves as actual businesses instead of pseudo businesses, where it's still sort of, you still kind of have that, you're still kind of masquerading as nonprofits, even though it's all about profits, where you're reinvesting back into your smaller programs, things like that, and you're keeping profit margins down intentionally in order to not have to give the money to the players. If this becomes a situation where the players, you know, get more of a piece of the pie moving forward here, and athletic departments can become all about profits, you know, above board instead of below board, then, you know, unfortunately, I wouldn't want to be, you know, some of those Olympic sports, because their day might be, you would almost, I don't really know what their future might, you know, look like in that sort of environment. And that would be, you know, pretty troubling if I were them. I don't know if the casual fan is all that concerned about it. You know, honestly, I don't necessarily know what universities would get out of it other than providing the opportunities, which has been, you know, the entire point all along. But this could fundamentally change, you know, college sports well beyond the football and men's basketball levels too.
Yeah. And that's what's going to be interesting about 2021 and beyond. The one thing is Title IX plays a big part in that. If you raise football scholarships, you're going to have to, if you continue to be compliant with the law, you're going to have to find other opportunities for other athletes.
What I meant when I said football scholarships will go up before they go down, I don't think that will happen, but I'm saying football is going to become more of a priority and less of a priority.
Because the money is...
And they will never cut football scholarships, because as I said before, you know, coaches collectively will have an aneurysm if they even articulate that possibility.
All right. Well, we've had some good discussion here in the last bit, and we are all friends, so that's a good thing, but interesting comments from both sides. All right, guys, thank you for thank you all also for listening and watching our Sunday simulcast, and we'll be back next week. We want to thank our sponsor, the Purdue Union Club Hotel. And of course, also we remind folks that you can sign up for a free trial at goldenblack.com if you're interested in becoming a member. So have a great week, everybody. A belated Happy New Year to you all. And we'll look forward to more next week. And all the coverage will be on the site this week on goldenblack.com.